Stephen Jill here.
Hello.
Welcome to the Land Academy Show, entertaining land investment talk. I'm Stephen Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk about choosing the right business partner.
Not life partner.
Well, it's going to become that.
Business partner.
And both of us said right before the show, I have a lot to say.
Ha!
So we both have a lot to say.
It's true.
It's all good stuff. Before we get into the show, though, let's take a question posted by one of our members, on the landacademy.com online community. It's free.
JT asks, hey, all, I've been investing here in Texas over the past year and have done well, picked up around 10 properties.
No, he's speaking like a Texan. He's typing like a Texan. Over the past year, and I have picked up around 10 properties, selling them all for cash.
Okay. Recently, however, I have become very interested in terms properties. It seems like here in Texas, you can sell a property on financing, but the deed will go into the buyer's name and you would hold the note like a bank. I really like the sound of the Arizona land contract that Jack and Jill have talked about on the podcast. My understanding is that you have the contract and don't deed the property until the full amount of the terms have been paid. True. My only concern is just that because of the successful mail campaigns of Land Academy members, the market in Arizona might be oversaturated as far as cheap rural land is concerned. I might be entirely off base with this, but my question is, has anyone over in Arizona sold properties on very friendly terms, i.e. $99 down, $99 a month, and if so, have you found it sells quicker than all cash? Additionally, has anyone sold properties on terms in any other states that you do a land contract similar to Arizona? Appreciate any response or any opinions on this.
Here's the deal. There are two ways to sell property on terms. A land contract, which is he's calling the Arizona way, mm-hmm. and a deed of trust, which is how you usually purchase a house, right? You buy the property, it gets put in your name, and there's a lien on it, and the bank holds a lien until it's paid off. Those are the local laws and rules dictate which way you do it. In Arizona, it's legal to do it both ways, but there's ramifications for both ways, like everywhere. In some places, it's not legal to do it the land contract way, or it's not allowed. Is it enforced? No. Do you drive 75 and a 65 every single day? Yep. It's the same thing. Am I advocating breaking the law? No, I'm not advocating breaking the law. I'm just here to tell you the truth. So, and then I want you to check into it before you go gunslinging because you're in Texas.
You bring up a valid point. You need to be aware of everything. However, there's whatever agreement. Like, it's like if I wanted to sell my brother-in-law my car and I accept $100 a month for, 3 years or whatever it is, that's between us.
Yeah, well, you're probably breaking the law.
I might be.
But is he going to turn you in?
Correct.
Here's when he's going to turn
and
you
maybe
in.
Maybe I'm carrying the insurance on and everything too because it's still in my name. I might go, I'll cover all that stuff too. So you're going to pay me $150 bucks a month because I'm going to cover the insurance. And then when it's paid off, and then we officially switch everything over to you. Is that it? Probably against...
And
probably,
everybody...
Probably not.
Everybody loves deals like that, me included. And when do they go sideways, Joe?
When somebody complains.
When the guy you sold the car to, because you broke up with his sister,
yeah.
The guy you sold the car to is real pissed about that.
Yep.
And who does he do? He throws a book at you. So the moral of the story here is keep your customers happy. Do what you need to do, or they will turn you in.
Right.
And I really would have, there's so much money to be made here. Just do it right.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you, to undo a deed of trust, it costs thousands of dollars. I will also tell you this because we're here to help you because we have a ton of experience. 50 to 80% of the term sales that you initiate do not go to full term.
Right.
You end up taking the property back.
Right.
And reselling it.
Exactly.
And then 50 to 80% of the time you resell it, so you own this property for a very long time, if not forever.
And it was probably paid off in the first, if not right with the down payment very quickly. Most
right.
of these properties, if you do it right, are already paid off. So that's the beauty of this whole thing. And that's why a lot of people love it.
That's right.
So
there's a guy named Kent Taylor. He has a website. He's longer in the business than I am. His website's 1881.com, like the year. And he only does term sales, and he owns 80% of the property that he's ever owned. The guy owns tons and tons and tons of real estate. We've bought and sold properties to each other for years and years and years. So he's an expert on that. Go check his, check out how he does it. And then it's, and he's been in the business forever. That's a good working example right on the internet that you can review in 15 to 30 minutes and kind of mimic yourself after that. Mm-hmm. His website looks like it's from 1881.
I want to cover too this question because we haven't talked about this in a while. Stephen, will you please share your oversaturation? Or I'll share, let me share mine first. The times that I hear about this popping up is because I have heard of certain groups that think they have secret counties and they have this list of small counties. That's a way to oversaturate. Sure. If we're all working the same 10 counties and we're all sending mailers to the only back tax people in those same 10 counties,
yeah,
you are going to trip on each other. And that's where that comes from. The way we do this and the way Stephen teaches it in the program, he's teaching you how to ride a bike, not telling you what kind of bike to buy, not telling you where, what store to go to, not telling you where you should ride your bike, how fast, any of that. Like, these are the basics on how you ride a bike. Put your feet on, you pedal, you hold on here. That's what we do. We have so many members killing it. I mean, come on, think about it. 3,144 counties in the country. How many properties are in there? A lot. How many different property types? A lot. We are so happy that our members, they listen and they're doing it. They're going out and going, you know what? I'm going to try Idaho. It's gorgeous. We never talk about it. Here I come. You know, and I have members all, like I said, doing all over the country in lots of different areas we do that are just killing it. And we, counties I haven't even heard of, everyone, you know, and so that's the thing. So as far as oversaturation, oh, sure. If we all do Coconino County tomorrow with Flagstaff at 5 acres, because we all thought, one person said that he found it. Yeah, we are going to trip on each other a little bit. So go out there and find a new area.
Memorize this saying, listener. Oversaturation is a myth.
And that's true.
And it's a valid concern, though.
It's true.
And everybody has it right when they start.
It's
but
true.
If you just look, I'm filming Land Academy 2.0 right now. And here, and I start the whole thing out by looking at the country and looking at how many properties there are. There's 150 million properties in this country. Do you think that's oversaturated? And here's the number one thing, that there's two things that fuel a real estate sale undervalue: death and taxes. Mm-hmm. So you get a tax bill every year. Some places you get it twice a year. Some places you get it four times a year, every quarter. When you get that bill and it's paid up, there's no mortgage, and you're staring at it, and mm-hmm. then in one hand you're staring at that tax bill, and in the other hand you're staring at an offer to purchase that we sent, mm-hmm. you could have gotten 15 letters that month.
Yep.
The one that's closest to that tax time is the one you're gonna really take seriously, or the one that's got the highest offer in it. Mm-hmm. Oversaturation is a myth. Mm-hmm. People's life circumstances change all the time.
They do. I just had a call. This is a House Academy topic, but I just talked to a guy a couple of days ago. You know, really nice guy. He really called in going, how do you guys price your offers? I was like, oh, here we go. That's what I was expecting.
How do you answer that?
I just said, well, you know, here's what we look at. We take all this information. It's not as, and I tried to make him feel good. Mm-hmm. We use all the information we can get our hands off. Having said that, the assessors and the things like that don't always enter everything in right. So there's stuff we may not know. And anyway, it totally calmed him down. At the end of the call, he's like, you know what? He actually shared personal stuff with me. He's battling cancer.
Oh, geez.
They don't want to move, obviously, but he's like, I don't know what the future holds. I'm going to save your letter and I'm going to tell my wife about it.
That's terrible, Joe.
I know. I hate it. It's sad. I know that's probably not the best example, but it's real. And we record these calls. I have it, you know, and he was a really nice guy.
Oh, man.
But, here's what I told him. Here's how we ended the call. I said, you know what? I can't remember his name. I said, you know what? Here's how I hope this goes. I hope you are here a year from now and you and your wife are deciding you're going to sell this house because you're going to cruise the world for 3 years and you don't want this house to be thinking about.
Well done.
Thank you. And he goes, yeah,
We can fund your, we're happy to fund your worldwide excursion.
When you're done battling this and you're free and clear and you could travel now, ditch the house and go have some fun.
Good. Well said.
Thank you. That is how I ended it. And the guy, it was awesome.
Fantastic talent for Silver Linings.
So I this whole set, I love that it comes up, you know, and I'm glad that we're talking about it. I don't know why it's a fear, but
oversaturation's a myth.
Yeah, but don't worry about it. Thank you. I'm done.
Today's topic?
I thought we were on the topic. How funny is this?
Oh my gosh, we're not on the topic.
No.
Today's topic, choosing the right business partner. This is the meat of the show. This is so important.
I hope that wasn't really dark and down. I didn't mean to. Okay, but it's a real story.
I mean, it's a real example of why people choose to sell.
I know.
And why they choose to sell for cash quickly versus, you know, cleaning off the garage and listening to a real estate agent tell lies.
Right. So tell me.
How to choose a right business partner? So here's the thing. Somebody told me a long time ago, you have to be friends with a business partner or it's not going to work. And I believe that's half true. I don't believe it's entirely true. But you do have to have some version of, you have to see things the same way.
Right.
Like we do a lot of transactions, high dollar transactions that Jill and I are not interested in. Jill and I are not interested in funding like an $800,000 purchase price for a house and planting $700,000 into a house for 30 days. We're just not. That money is better spent on smaller deals, turning them faster. So we take on a lender partner, a private lending partner. Here's my rule. And I'm not saying you should do this. I'm just telling you, here's some of the bullet points that make it work for me. There's no contracts. There's no agreements. There's no talking. There's no talking on the phone. Hey, how's it going? Did you do this, that to the house? Did you do that? No. We do not put any, if there's a partnership, we don't put 20% in and yet put like a lender. No. That's how it works for us. And so I intentionally seek people out that are like that. We could raise tons and tons of money by doing a real estate fund then I got to get in the federal database and we got to do stuff with the Federal Trade Commission. We make enough money. Mm-hmm. That's just my personal, so I choose partners that think of it that way. Mm-hmm. Our vendors, by and large, are the same way. We don't have contracts. We have a handshake and a gentleman's agreement. And if one person's not happy, they get the heck out of Dodge. Mm-hmm. I just think that that's the way Jill and I like to operate in general. So, you know, the right business partner, just like the right life partner, they can sink the ship. I mean, the wrong one, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Completely sink the ship. Jill, I know you have a lot to say about this. Go ahead.
Yeah, so while you're talking, I wrote down some notes. So here are my things on choosing the right business partner. Number one, like you just touched on, you have to have the same vision. If you guys are not driving in the same direction, it's not going to work. Number one, and the same end goal. So you guys should have that all iced out. Number two, trust.
Yeah, trust.
You
right.
don't have
sure.
blind faith, trust that, because you guys are sharing a joint checking account, you know, for your business stuff. You don't have trust there. It's not going to work. You need to know each other's roles. You have to clearly define, I'm going to be this part of the business. You're going to do that part of the business. You have to agree on that. And you also have to, divide up the responsibilities. It doesn't make any sense. I have two people working on the same thing at the same time. That's a waste.
You know, to expand that further, it's when you choose a business partner, it's really not a good idea to choose one that has the exact same talent that you do.
True.
Jill's really good at operations and I'm not, but I'm really good at acquisitions and data.
It's true.
And so we complement each other.
That's very true.
We don't duplicate each other.
And even the little things, like you don't like talking on the phone, I love talking on the phone.
Right.
You know, little things like that. So, and it's funny, like some of our big high level meetings, I'll go in there, I'll get us a meeting. You know, it's kind of fun for me. Steven will say, I need to have a meeting with that guy. You got to go get us a meeting we need to talk to that guy. Oh, I'll get us in there. And then you close,
yeah,
you get in there and you do the talking.
Yeah, when we get in there, I can.
Yeah,
getting the meetings, 80% of the difficulty. Once you have the meeting, our closing percentage is pretty good.
Yeah, I'll get us in there. And then my final thing that I wrote down real quick about choosing the right business partner is 100% support in front of the world. If you guys have a disagreement, you talk about it later behind closed doors. Yeah. But in front of everybody else, you have to always appear to be a united front. Unified front. That's it. There's going to be times that your business partner is going to stand up and make some lofty projection, and your heart's going to sink, going, there's no way in hell.
This is experience.
We can afford that, buy that, do that. We don't have the staff for that. Whatever it is, but you need to stand there with a smile and say, yep, we're going to do it. By the end of 2018, we will have X. And then once it's done, you're in the car, you're in your office.
In the car.
Whatever it is, that's the time you go, what were you thinking? And how do you ever think we can pull this off?
Right.
Whatever it is. But that, to me, those for me are the top things for choosing the right business.
If you have children, you already know that. Kids will eat you alive if you think that you're going against each other. You got to stand there shoulder to shoulder and say, and back each other up, even if it's off.
Yep. We're going to do what dad says. And you're going to go, oh, this is hilarious. I'm not going to babysit. Are you going to babysit?
Right. Yeah. But if they think you're going against each other on stuff, they can smell that.
Oh, they can. They smell the fear.
And then they'll go around you.
Yep.
Yeah. What is it with kids?
They're smart about that stuff.
Yeah. When they're real young, even.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I wonder what the average age is when the kids first realize, don't ask dad, ask mom, or vice versa.
Right. There's always one that's a little easier. We don't do that. Go, dad told me to come and tell you. No.
Oh, no, we don't do that. We make
it all stops right here.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're not playing those games. It's funny.
Like, why would you bother your mother with this? You actually know how to run the washing machine.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
That's awesome. I think we covered it. Do you have anything else you want to add?
No.
Okay.
You've done it again. You spent almost 20 minutes listening to the Land Academy show. Join us tomorrow for another interesting episode where we discuss planning for the inevitable real estate recession.
And we answer your questions, should you have one, posted on our free online community found off of landacademy.com, or you can go straight there. It's landinvestors.com.
You're not alone in your real estate ambition. You know, it's so you've done 1,000 deals, now what, week here. And so this next topic tomorrow, planning for the real estate recession, it's inevitable. There is going to be a downturn. So we'll talk about some of the signs that I look for. You can almost set your clock by it when you start to look for the things that, you know, you just need to know how to do it and plan for it. You don't want to be stuck with a ton of property and no money.
Isn't that the greatest
thing? That's the gist
of it. I can't wait to talk about this.
Me too.
Share the fun by subscribing on iTunes or wherever you are listening. And while you're at it, please rate us there.
We are Steve and Jill. Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.